Hello. Oh, wow, that was loud. My name's Noah, and today I'm reading Matthew 20, verse 1 to 16. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire men to work in his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. About the third hour, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, "You also go and work in my vineyard, and I'll pay you whatever is right." So they went. He went out again about the sixth hour and the ninth hour and did the same thing. About the 11th hour, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, "Why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing?" "Because no one has hired us," they answered. He said to them, "You also go and work in my vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay them their wages. Begin the ninth with the last ones hired and go in on to the first." The workers who were hired about the 11th hour came and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each one of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against their landowner. "These men who were hired last worked only 1 hour," they said, "and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day." But he answered one of them, "Friend, I am not being unfair to you. Take your pay and go. I want to give the man who was hired last the same as I give you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous?" So the last will be the first, and the first will be the last. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks, Noah. Good morning, everyone. My name's Ryan, and aren't parables fun? As we're doing a match up with Pathway Kids today, and we did a couple of weeks ago with this story, parables of, or the stories of the lost sheep, lost coin, and lost boy. This week, we're doing this parable of the workers in the vineyard. And as we're doing Pathway Kids, sort of the same stuff as them, I thought we should do the same stuff that I do with Pathway Kids, and that is, use my trusty whiteboard here, to, in masterclass, I always ask, after reading the passage, what questions do you guys have? What emotional outbursts? What comments, observations? Hit me. Yeah, Corey, what do you got? Yep, so, yep. For the sake of that, I'm just going to... Oh, man, this pen doesn't work either. Same... Yep, same pay. I'm just going to say that because it's too hard to summarize. Any other thoughts, questions? Hit me. Anything's fine. That's what I encourage our masterclass kids to do. Why would the boss do it? Yep. Well, this whiteboard's hard to do. Would. Do what, Etienne? Okay. Yep. And Chris, I think I saw your hand up. Yeah, yeah. Unfair. Yep. Couple more, yeah, at the back. Is that? Yep, Josie. Yep, go. Oh, yeah. Are the lazy ones rewarded? All right, one more and then we'll keep moving. Yeah, at the back there, yes, go. Yep. Yeah, okay. So equal value. Is that what this is showing us? You can tell I'm not a teacher. I can't write on a whiteboard to save myself. Oh, I did say one more, but I got a soft spot. Josie, what's up? Why is it with the way he paid them? Yeah, okay. So why that order? I'm just going to do order and question mark because I'm running out of room and the ability to write sideways. Cool. All right, so that's what I like to do in our masterclass class, because it actually gets you thinking more deeply about the passage, right? It's good to do this. It's good to think through this stuff. You know, it's good to think through the Bible and the Christian faith because it can handle it, right? It can handle our questions. It can handle our doubts. It can handle anything we throw at it because it's true. Now, I'm sure if we spent a lot more time here, we could fill this whiteboard up with lots and lots of things. And a lot more questions would come up, I'm sure. Today, though, I'd like to just work through the same theme that our Pathway kids are exploring today, and that is called, if I turn this on, that helps, Grumbles and Grace. So we're going to dive into this idea, not because it's better than what was shared here or more relevant than what was shared here, but because it's what our Pathway kids are exploring today in their lesson. So let's go. As this parable kicks off in verse 1 of chapter 20, we can easily miss that this parable is actually a response to the disciples' question at the end of chapter 19. Who's got a Bible on their lap? We're pretending to be Pathway kids here. If you've got a Bible on your lap, shout out. What do we see at the end of chapter 19? Or generally, what's in chapter 19? There's a story of someone who walks away sad. Rich young man. So there's this story of the rich young man who wants to inherit eternal life, but is unwilling to let go entirely of his life here on earth. He does not want to let go of his wealth in order to fully follow Jesus. And immediately after that encounter, towards the end of chapter 19, the disciples kind of pull Jesus aside and have a bit of a chat. So in this great little conversation, we see Peter, in classic Peter style, say, "We left everything behind to follow you. What then will there be for us?" Now, I don't think Peter asked this in a humble sort of a way. It would seem that Peter thinks that because he has given everything to follow Jesus, that he will be rewarded with everything too. Perhaps thinking that he'll get more than, you know, the average follower of Jesus, or maybe even more than the other disciples, as he had to leave even his wife at home while out on the road with Jesus. As, to the best of our knowledge, no other disciple had a wife to leave. Therefore, Peter left more than anyone else. Now, granted, this is speculation, as we aren't told this stuff here in this story. But what is important to see, it's because of Peter's question that we get Jesus telling this parable at all. And then, spoiler alert, Peter's possible thinking and motivation behind asking the question is, again, in classic Peter style, about to be crushed. Now, the parable is a basic enough story, really. There's nothing too terribly obscure with it. Right? A landowner, he needs workers to work in his vineyard. So he does what anyone who wanted workers did at the time. He went to the marketplace. This is where the day labourers hung out to get work. Workers like this didn't typically get full-time work in one place, as we kind of know today. They made themselves available for anyone to hire them on any day. If you wanted work, you'd go to the marketplace. And the earlier you got there, the better chance you had at getting work, as potential employers would be getting early, would be getting there early too, to get the most out of you for the entire day. So getting there early, it showed you were keen to work. And then the earlier, as I've already said, that the earlier that the landowners got to the marketplace, the better and more keen the workers would be. And as a landowner, you would get a lot more hours of productive work out of them for the same pay, which was generally agreed upon as a denarius, this weird word we heard today. It's just a Roman coin that symbolises one day's pay. So, the marketplace, it's where you went if you wanted work. It's where you went if you wanted workers for the day. So, this landowner in the story does what landowners do. And he goes out early at sunrise to get some workers. He gets a whole bunch. He agrees to pay them the usual day's wages, and off they go to work. The landowner sort of checks his watch, sees it's nearly morning smoko time, and there's heaps more work to be done. So off he goes to the marketplace again to gather more workers. He enlists a bunch more and assures them he'll pay what is right and fair for a day's work. And off they go. Now, this happens a few more times throughout the day. Happens again at midday, then at 3 p.m, and then even at 5:00, which is about an hour before knock-off time. each time he goes out to the marketplace to gather more workers. All right? And at the end of the day, all the workers get in line to receive their pay. Those who worked 1 hour are first. And I think to answer the question, I think of Josie, I feel like it's to really push this home, to really rub salt in the wounds of Jesus' illustration here. So the people who worked 1 hour, they get their pay first, and they get an entire day's wage for 1 hour of work. They've hardly had to raise a sweat, and here they are getting a full day of pay. Which then gets us to the workers who work the full day, through the hottest part of it, and for the longest. I can imagine, you know, standing in line, they're thinking to themselves, well, if he got a full day's pay, what am I going to get? Maybe 12 days' pay, perhaps. Well, when they get their pay, they get the same as everyone else. And they're not happy about it. Which, I think if we pause here and go back to the whiteboard, I suspect we kind of understand or side with them a little bit, right? What do you feel? What do you feel at this point in the story? Put yourself in the shoes of someone who's worked the full 12 hours. What do you feel? Shout it out. Ripped off. Yep. Someone else said something? Yep. Let's go with that. Yeah. Other ideas? Sorry? Oh, yeah. Start late. Yeah, I'm not going to get up early again. Yep. Not doing a full day again. Yep. One more. My masterclass would give me heaps. Nothing? Angry? Sorry?
I arrested myself and I'm paying for that.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like they're right.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, it's too hard to spell, so I'm not going to write that. It's good. So, it's good to feel these things because that's what the story is supposed to do. So let me get back to the parable. Jesus wraps it up explaining that the landowner is free to do what he wants with his money. If he chooses to be generous, he can do that. And his workers aren't really in a position to complain about it. And then he finishes the parable with the famous words, "So the last shall be first, and the first shall be last." Now remember why we're getting this parable in the first place. I can't help but imagine Jesus looking at Peter, looking into his eyes and therefore actually into his soul when he says those words. And I can't help but imagine Peter sort of like going, oh boy, squirming on the inside and feeling the conviction for being so prideful. So that's the context and the parable, I think, explained a little bit and investigated. Let's get a bit closer by not just picking on Peter here, but putting ourselves in his place. How are we like Peter? How is this parable speaking to us today? When we think something's unfair, what do we like to do? Grumble. I certainly do. You know, like with the umpire who favoured the other team and allowed them to win. The job promotion given to that other person who hasn't even been with the company very long. Or the seemingly bad luck I have when it comes to life. No one else seems to deal with what I have to deal with. And this can take a whole bunch of forms, right? Materially, in the physical stuff that we own or want to own. Relationally, you know, everyone else seems happier than me in their life with who they're with or not with. Personally, everyone else seems more comfortable with who they are, more certain about where they're going, and more at ease with the life they're living. Emotionally, everyone else seems to be able to enjoy life more freely, while I'm the one carrying things that make it harder to feel content or hopeful or at peace. Look, as Grace said, we are humans. We do need to vent to one another when things are tricky. I'm not saying that we can't do this as Christians. But there is a line somewhere, which we're not going to go too much into today, there is a line somewhere where too much negativity and woe is me talk is unhelpful, unhealthy and ungodly. So it can be good and healthy to vent when things are tough. And in fact, we should do it. And Jesus is saying we can't. Jesus is not saying we can't, sorry. This is not the kind of grumbling that Jesus is talking about here in this parable. In the parable, all right, Pathway kids, listen, you've got to answer the question, who is the grumbling directed at? This is not a rhetorical question. At the landowner, exactly. And then who is this landowner representing in the parable, do we think? God, that's right. There is very little debate here that the landowner in this story is God himself. So the parable is showing us that grumbling against God is problematic for us. So easily we can find ourselves thinking that he has treated me unfairly, or thinking, as Peter alludes to in chapter 19, that I deserve more because I've given up so much. The parable, though, is not directed at Peter's pride. It's directed at us. This parable reveals a human tendency to think that God owes me. Subtly or not so subtly, things can and do creep into our minds. If we're honest enough with ourselves, I suspect things like this have popped into our thinking from time to time. We can think God owes us because of what we've given. You know, I've given so much money, God owes me provision. We can think that God owes us because of what we've done. Thinking things like, I've served so faithfully, now God owes me some recognition. We can think God owes us because of what we've endured. You know, I've suffered faithfully, God owes me some relief. We can think God owes us because of what we have sacrificed. You know, I've given up so much to follow Christ. God owes me something in return. And eventually, we can even find ourselves thinking that God owes us because of who we are. I've been faithful for years. I've followed the rules. I've done what I was asked. Surely I deserve more than what they do. And then perhaps the most dangerous version, thinking, God, after all I've done for you, .. When it's said out loud, we're repulsed at the thought. But examine yourself closely, and I suspect if you're anything like me, things like this have crept into our minds and our thinking at times. Now, obviously, this happens at varying degrees in each of us. Some people are more prone to think like this than others. Some people are a bit more like the disciple Peter than others. But all of us have at least a bit of it lurking within. And this parable, it confronts our tendency to grumble against God. And I ultimately think it confronts our pride in that we think we deserve more from God than others. It confronts our entitled attitude towards God, that he would owe us anything at all. Now, we are not alone in this. Turns out people have had this tendency since, like, forever. There's an old dude in the Bible called Job, and he knows the struggle is real for Job. He had a series of very, very unfortunate events come his way, and throughout his many speeches, it seems like he thought God owed him an answer for it all. And God responds to Job and says, I've picked verses from all throughout this big speech from God. Who has a claim against me that I must pay? Everything under heaven belongs to me. And then God says, where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Have you ever given orders to the morning or shown the dawn its place? Do you send lightning bolts on their way? Do they report to you? Here we are. Job grumbled at God. And with these questions, God put Job back in his place. And Paul says to the early church in 1 Corinthians 4, verse 7, what do you have that you did not receive? This is a devastating question for spiritual entitlement. Your gifts, received. Your abilities, received. Your opportunities, received. Your salvation, received. Your very life, received. So how can we, the recipients, turn around and say to the giver, now you owe me? And then in Psalm 50, verses 9 to 12, God says this, I have no need of a bull from your stall or of goats from your pens. For every animal of the forest is mine, and the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know every bird in the mountains and the insects in the field are mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell you, for the world is mine and all that is in it. Now, the point of these Bible verses is not to portray God as some grumpy old guy in the clouds wanting to lord it over his puny humans. I think the point of these Bible verses is to help us to put God in his proper place and to help put us in our proper place too. To show another example of how this can happen, who's a fan of the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy? I am. Yep, so there's a great scene in The Dark Knight where one of Bruce Wayne's employees discovers the plans to all of Batman's machines and therefore plans to use this information to blackmail Batman and get money out of the Wayne Foundation. So this employee confronts the head of Applied Sciences and demands a payout. And Lucius Fox, the character, responds with the following. I'd love to do a Morgan Freeman accent, but I can't. Let me get this straight. You think that your client, one of the wealthiest, most powerful men in the world, is secretly a vigilante who spends his nights beating criminals to a pulp with his bare hands. And your plan is to blackmail this person? Good luck. While this isn't the perfect example, it does get across this idea that we can lose sight of who we are and elevate ourselves beyond where we ought to be. And we like to lower God far lower than he ought to be. I think given the right circumstances, it seems that we human like to elevate ourselves and lower God. And this parable and those verses we just read a few moments ago are here to confront this. Who are we to demand anything from God? Who am I to think that God owes me a thing? Do you grumble at God? Can you see pride in your life? Have you elevated yourself and lowered God? Have you ever caught yourself thinking, you know, that God owes me? Be reminded of who he is. The God of the universe, King of kings, eternal, all-powerful, your creator. And be reminded of who you are. A created being living in his universe, finite and not all-powerful. Now, I know this morning might have sounded a bit harsh and a bit abrupt, but I don't know how else to deal with pride in my own life but to be made painfully aware of it, hence why I'm saying what I'm saying here. God doesn't owe me a thing. God doesn't owe you a thing. He has already given everything to us. The very air we breathe, the world in which you live, and he gave himself entirely for you. In Jesus. You see, God knows us humans are prideful and like to elevate ourselves and lower him. He knows this, and he's already done something about it. Christ died for you. He died for your pride. Throw yourself at his feet again. Confess your pride. Confess your entitlement. Confess that you've lowered God and elevated yourself. Quit your grumbling. Jesus forgives you. and he will continue to forgive you. Recognize your pride. Confess it to God. Confess it to a trusted friend. God has and he will forgive you over and over again. So a large part of this parable reveals a human tendency to think that God owes us. But it also reveals something else, and into an entirely different group of people. People who feel insecure, unwanted, useless, and too far gone. Not everyone grumbles because they think God's grace is too generous to others and stingy towards themselves. Not everyone thinks God owes me. Some people grumble because they think God's grace could never be generous to them. It can look like believing that you cannot be loved or chosen or asked to participate in God's kingdom because you are too useless or too broken or too unlovable. I think we can see this in the parable. Think about it. In the parable, it's likely the workers that were picked at 5 in the evening hung around in the marketplace all day. They were not asked to go to work. All day, they sit there and wait and do nothing. No one wanted them. Verse 7 literally says they are there because no one hired them. I don't know, think of the kid picked last for the soccer team. You may well have been that kid once. And you may well feel like you're right back there again today. Unwanted, unloved. Thinking God couldn't possibly want me. And even if he did, I've not done a thing to earn any sort of reward from him. I'm not good enough. I've wasted too many years. God might forgive me, but he doesn't really want me or love me. Other people are useful to God. I'm not. I've come too late. I've got nothing to offer. Perhaps you don't struggle with the thought, God owes me, but instead you feel like God couldn't possibly want me. My encouragement to you is to look at what the landowner does. He goes looking for them and he chooses them to work for him. And when they come, he doesn't give them, you know, 10-cent coin. He gives them the same denarius. Not because they worked as long as the others. Not because they somehow earned their place. Not because they proved themselves worthy. But because he is generous. Now, to be as blunt as I was with the prideful, I'm now saying this to those who are insecure and feel unwanted. The same God who died for the prideful died for you too. Do you feel unwanted? The God of the universe, he wants you and he has sought you out. Do you feel like you have nothing to give him? Well, he doesn't reward based on what you can do at all. Do you feel unlovable? He has shown the ultimate display of his love for you by dying in your place. Too dirty? He has washed you clean of your filth and sin with his own blood. You feel too ashamed. Shame has no say over you. There's no say over your life now because Jesus bore it for you. You who feel unwanted, unable to contribute, unlovable, you are hearing this today because Jesus is looking for you. He's looking for you to call you to himself and remind you that it's not about what you can do or how good you are. He wants you because he is a good God and a generous God. This parable has a lot to say to both the proud and the insecure. The proud person needs to hear, you cannot earn God's grace. And the person who feels unwanted needs to hear, you cannot disqualify yourself from God's grace. The first worker says, I've done much, therefore I deserve more. The last worker says, I've done too little to deserve anything. And the gospel says, neither of you are standing on the basis of what you deserve. You are standing on the generosity of God. Both the prideful grumbler and the insecure grumbler are looking at themselves rather than the goodness of the giver. Take your eyes off yourself and see who it is who loves you. Take your eyes off yourself and see who has called you his own. Take your eyes off yourself and see that he has called you to participate in building his kingdom. Not because he can't do it without you, but because he wants you to be a part of it. He is a good and generous God who has and will forgive your pride. He's a good and generous God who wants you, warts and all. You don't have to be good enough or contribute enough. He is calling you. Take your eyes off yourself, off what you think you deserve, of what you think you lack, and fix your eyes on the goodness of the one who calls you, loves you, forgives you, and gives you more grace than you could ever earn. Let's pray. God, who are we that we can come before you? For those of us who have been perhaps painfully put back in our place and haven't had a piece of humble pie this morning, would you meet us with your amazing grace? Our pride is sin, and we're sorry for grumbling and thinking we deserve more from you. Forgive us, God. We know we can ask for this because Jesus died for us and took upon himself our sin. Thanks that despite our pride and grumbling, you forgive. Thanks for forgiving us over and over again, because boy, do we need it. And God, for those of us here today who believe the lie that I am not good enough, that I am unwanted by God, those of us who are insecure in your love for us, who doubt your love, you give us everything, not because we can do anything or even contribute anything, but because you're generous and good. You love us and you want us to participate in your kingdom. May we believe this and live it out. God, thanks for your word and your presence with us. May you be glorified in all we do and say as we go from here. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks, music team. Over to you.